So there are two men who've been in prison for a long time. And they're joined by a third prisoner. And the two of them sit there, and one goes, 96. And the other one cracks up, starts to laugh. And then the second one, the one who was laughing, says, 23. And the first one begins to laugh. And the new prisoner says, what's going on here? And one of the prisoners explains to him, he goes, look, we've been together for 20 years now in this cell. Between us, we know about 300 jokes. We've told them over and over and over and over again. So now, instead of telling the joke, we just say, 72, and the other one starts to laugh. So the new prisoner says, hey, can I try it? He says, yeah, give it a shot. He says, 81. Silence. He goes, 94, nothing. He turns to the prisoner and says, what's the matter? He goes, well, you didn't tell it right. I bring this up because Parshat Pinchas, this morning's parsha, basically gives way to three different sermons, and you could just go 1, 2, and 3. The first sermon is, Pinchas was a zealot. A zealot is somebody who's extreme, right? An extremist, somebody who's passionate, very passionate about something. So the first sermon is, Pinchas is a zealot, zealotry is bad, don't be like Pinchas. The second sermon is, Pinchas was a zealot for God, zealotry for God is good, you should be like Pinchas. And the third sermon is, Pinchas was a zealot. Sometimes zealotry is good, sometimes it's bad. It depends what you're a zealot for, so you have to be very careful. And when you read the commentaries on Pinchas, they fall almost perfectly into one of those three separate sermons. And when a rabbi gets up to speak about Pinchas, you almost could say to them, are you going to do a 1, a 2, or a 3? And so I could just say 2 and sit down. But then one of you would say, well, you didn't tell it right. And I really have given a lot of thought to this, and I realize that there is a possibility for a fourth that doesn't fall into any of those three categories, but is important and both religiously and nationally happens to be very relevant to our situation. And it has to do with the fact that when you think about someone being a zealot, we tend to erase the difference between your convictions and your actions. So, for example, you can have two people who are zealous about the continuity of the state of Israel, passionately devoted to the continuation of the state. One of them can think that every settlement ought to be moved, and all the settlers brought in to the 67 borders, pre-67 borders, and another think that not a single settler should be dislodged, and that the settlement should be expanded, and one will call the other a zealot. But they're both zealots in principle, they just have different strategies about how to achieve what they believe in. And we tend to call somebody an extremist if their strategies disagree with ours. I'll give you another example. Who's the zealot? The Orthodox rabbi, the conservative rabbi? So one will say to the other, you're an extremist. All you do is change the tradition. And the second will say to the first, you're an extremist. You don't realize that the tradition has always changed and you're holding on to things that in fact are fossils and not allowing the tradition to grow. So the Orthodox rabbi will say, you're changing this and this and this and this, and eventually that will destroy the tradition and you have to be zealous for the preservation of the tradition. The conservative rabbi will say, does say, is saying, Moses didn't have a Talmud. Rabbi Akiva didn't have the philosophy of Maimonides. Maimonides didn't have the Chabad philosophy of Shneur Zalman of Liadi. Shneur Zalman of Liadi didn't have the Reconstructionism of Mordechai Kaplan or the dialogue of Martin Buber. And all of those things changed Judaism. Judaism has always changed. In fact, there was a group that didn't change. They were called the Karaites, and they're gone. So if you're zealous for the preservation of Judaism, you have to believe in change. It has always changed. Who would want something not to change? Everything that grows changes. As soon as you stop change, you stop growth, and it dies. So who's the zealot? And I realized that when we talk about zealotry, what we have to do is recognize that someone can disagree with our tactics and share our principles. Is it possible to be more of a zealot for civil rights than was Martin Luther King Jr.? But he wouldn't condone violence. Malcolm X, who was equally a zealot, would condone violence. So who was the greater zealot? It was actually Dr. King that said, if a man doesn't have something that he's willing to die for, then he's not fit to live. That's the statement of a zealot. And yet, he wouldn't kill, but he would and did die. So when we look at Pinchas, the answer is, of course you should be a zealot. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily act cruelly, violently, precipitously, thoughtlessly. Who isn't a zealot about taking care of the people that they love? All of us are. And yet, at a certain point, you allow your child to drive a car, which no good zealot would do. Granted, you run alongside the car to make sure. But that doesn't mean you're not a zealot. It's all about the way in which you translate your principles into action and also the way you understand that other human beings can share your principles and yet act differently. Martin Peretz is the editor of the New Republic. Once asked the great historian Frank Manuel, who studied, by the way, primarily Jewish and Christian relations all through the Middle Ages. Not a happy subject. He said to him, so tell me, what have you learned from your study of history? Distill it into one lesson. And he said, the one lesson I've learned is always be suspicious of your enthusiasms. As soon as you think you're 100% for something, be a little bit suspicious. In other words, be a zealot, but also be thoughtful. Before you act on your zealotry, consider the fact that there's another way to approach it, another way to see it, another way to understand it. Some of you were here last night. At Friday Night Live, we had religion scholars from all over the world, from Indonesia and Nigeria and Bulgaria and China and Jordan and a Muslim from Israel and a Hindu from India, and they all came to see the service. All of them are passionate about their religion and their faith. None of them came to a synagogue because they were considering converting to Judaism. There was, by the way, one Jewish scholar among them as well. He was from Argentina. If you're wondering how they got here, the answer is you paid for them. Not as Sinai Temple members, but as taxpayers. The State Department each year sends a certain number of religion scholars around the country for a few weeks to learn about religion in America. It's a good thing. What they saw was that there are people who are passionate about their faith who practice it very differently from the way they practice their faith. And then afterwards, we went to the chapel and we had a dialogue about their tradition and our tradition. A little bit about the Middle East, only a little bit. And we all parted friends. Nobody's convictions were different. but they understood that it is possible to carry out your convictions about God, about goodness, about peace, about solidarity, about community in very different ways. So this is, I think, the fourth sermon about Pinchas, which is, it's not a question of whether it's good or bad to be a zealot. Everyone must be a zealot about certain things. Can you imagine somebody who doesn't feel strongly, who doesn't have passionate principles about anything? Such a human being is barely alive. But understand that in a complicated world, to be able to carry out those principles requires very different avenues of approach. And you shouldn't think that someone believes the things you believe only if they act the way you act. That somebody has commitments like yours only if they behave the way you do. I know, as do you, that before you have children, you see that other parents are bad parents. Doesn't matter how they act towards their kids, you know you will do better. You see them get upset in the supermarket and you think, that is something I will never do. But if you think that, you haven't learned the lesson. That people can feel the way you do and still act in ways you don't understand or ways you don't understand yet. That you can be a zealot and still press for peace. That you can be a zealot and think at times there's a need for war. That you can be a zealot and go full force forward. That you can be a zealot and hold back. That you can believe things passionately, fully, deeply, with your heart and with your soul, and still not be sure of the right way to act to bring those things about. That's why there is such a tremendous variety in God's world. And you have Pinchas, who is called a zealot, who plunges into the midst of Israel, and you have Elijah, who is called a zealot, who runs off into the wilderness. That's why you have people on all sides of the religious debate and all sides of the debate in Israel. It doesn't mean that they don't all care, that they don't all love, that they're not all zealots. It just means that in this confusing and in this multifarious world of full of variety and color and difference, that each of us carries out our zealotry in our own way. If our zealotry can be tempered by understanding, by respect, and by love, then we've got sermon number four, the most important one of all, which is what we should be zealous for ultimately is what Pinchas received, Brit Shalom, the covenant of peace. Shabbat Shalom.